So we are holding on Chof Amud Beis, three lines from the bottom. Okay, so we've been learning the last couple of days about these passe berois, these L-shaped poles that you put up around a well to make it allowed to. So now the well itself is a Rishos HaYochid. Now the area around it becomes a Rishos HaYochid as well, and therefore now you're going to be allowed to draw water from the well and give it to your animal to drink inside the pasim. So the Gemara says, "Amr Rabbi Yitzchak bar Ada lo hutru pase beirois ela lo oiler golem bilvad." This whole thing of pase beirois was on, the heter was only for oiler regel. They're coming to Yerushalayim with their animals. So therefore they need to have water to drink on the way. So therefore we only allowed it for that purpose, not just them. So the question is, what do you mean? There's a brisa that says that pase berois are only allowed when it comes to an animal. It sounds like it means any animal, not just oiler regolim. The answer is my behemoth's oiler regolim. It means only the animals of the oiler regol. The brisa doesn't always specify things in such detail. It specifies in more detail than a Mishnah does, but it doesn't have to specify all the details that's left for the Amoraim. So it means specifically the animals of the oiler regol. Aval. But Aval Adam, but continues Rabbi Yitzchak, or continues the Braisa. When it comes to a person, if a person wants to get water from the well, metapis va'ola, metapis v'yored, he has to climb up and down with his hands and feet. Meaning he holds on to there'll be handholds and footholds in the wall of the on the side of the well, because inevitably the wall is not completely smooth, and he has to climb down and go and climb up and climb down and climb up and go get himself water. We don't allow him, the Chachamim are not allowing him to go and draw a bucket of water from there and put it inside the pase berois for himself to drink. Because he has an alternative, because he's able to do that, as opposed to the animals, they can't very well climb down into the well, so therefore we allow him to draw water for them. As the braisa is going to continue further on, that if the well is too wide to do that, then people are allowed to also, but we'll get to that in a minute. So the Gemara says, "Eini, is that so?" V'ha'amar of Yitzchak, amar of Yehuda, amar Shmuel, loy hutru pase berois, elal be'er mayim chayim bilvad. Pase berois are only allowed for a well of living water, meaning, as we said a couple of days ago, a well that's always welling up with new water, as opposed to a pit where they just store water. You can have a well which there's some mayim chayim in it, but mostly it's rainwater or whatever. So he's saying that it means specifically mayim chayim. The ila behema. Now, if anyway you can only use the pase berois for the sake of giving water to an animal, mali chayim mali mechonosin. When who cares whether the water is living water, fresh water, or whether it's water that's collected there in the pit and is stagnant over there. Either way, you can give such water to an animal to drink. So the fact, it's one thing if you say that the water has to be suitable for a person to be able to drink. Okay, then we understand a person is less likely to drink mei boris, only if in a pinch he'll drink it, but usually he'd prefer to have fresh water. Animals are not as picky. So if it's only allowed for be'er mayim chayim, then why is it allowed only for animals? The answer is, but in midi dechazi la'adam. After all, though, the reason is because the water does have to be suitable for a person to drink. Meaning, Rashi explains, since, as the Gemara previously said, the only mechanism that makes these pase berois work is the fact that you have a well in the middle. So therefore, you have to have, Rashi says, mayim chashuvim. You have to have water that's significant enough that a person would drink it. So, Tosfos talks about a couple of possibilities over here. One of them is that maybe if you drew water for your animal, then you're allowed to drink the leftovers. You're just not allowed to draw it for yourself in the first place. But on the other hand, another possibility, Tosfos says, is that you can't put up a pase berois to begin with, where the only purpose you're going to be using it for is for people to be able to drink. Because then people have an alternative. They can go up and down into the well and drink while they're still standing inside the well, and therefore they don't have that heter. For if you set them up for the sake of animals, for the sake of the animals of the oiler regel, then Tosfos says maybe actually a person would be allowed to draw water from it, v'hatchila. Fine. So the point is then, okay, so according to either of these answers, the point is the water has to be suitable for people. And another idea of it is also, if the water is suitable for people, only then can it be considered that it's a dira. We learned at the beginning of the perek that an area has to be hukaf l'dira in order for the mechitzas to be valid. It has, or at least if the enclosure is larger than a certain space, then it has to be that it was enclosed for the purpose of living quarters. If you have mayim chayim in there, then the water is important enough to be considered living quarters. If not, if it's only the kind of stagnant water that you would only give animals, then maybe it's not necessarily considered important enough for that purpose.
So the same way a person can go down to drink, the animal can drink, is also from directly from the bar?
No, that's the point. The animal can't. The animal has no way of climbing down there. So therefore, you're allowed to draw a bucket of water to give to the animal to drink. Sorry about that. Thanks. I also can put on the air conditioner. I forgot to. So the point is that an animal can't climb down there to drink. A person can. So therefore, we're only allowing this passe berois where you need it for animals. On the other hand, the water itself has to be something that's suitable for people to drink. So again, according to Rashi, the point is, good morning, that if the water is fresh water, then it's important enough for people. Therefore, it can be considered a makom dira. According to Tosfos's way of looking at it, what we mean is it has to be that it was set up to begin with for animals, and once it was, then maybe people are allowed to do it as well. And also another point is that Tosfos's first point is that the water itself has to be fresh enough that people could drink from it, meaning, in other words, that if you draw some for an animal, that a person will be able to drink the leftovers. The bird is usually big enough for a person to climb down into, yeah. So in fact, Gufa, getting back to what we said, so only allowed when you're giving water to an animal to drink. Aval Adam, but when it comes to a person, wants to drink from the well, metapis v'ola, metapis v'yored, he has to climb up and climb down into the well. By the way, Rabbi Yaakov Emden says, why the lashon ola first, then yored? You have to go down into the well first. He says it means as many times as necessary. Even if, let's say, you went down once into the well, and now you have to come up, and then later on you're going to realize, you know what, I have to go down again. Still, that's what you're required to do, rather than go and draw a bucket and put it out in between the pasibirois for yourself to drink. So that's why Ola first. In other words, even you're down in the well and you're going to come up, and later on you're going to need to go down again, you're still going to be required to do that as many times as necessary. Okay. No, but not the animals, for yourself, where you don't have the heter of using a bucket. That's what we're saying. For you yourself are going down and drinking, and later on you're going to want to drink again and so forth. You're going to have to go down as many times as necessary. There's no point at which we're going to say, you know what, I've gone down enough times already in there, let me just draw a bucket and put it in the street and I'll drink from it that way. That's the point. Yeah. Well, that's true. When it comes to drinking in general, the Magen Avraham says in Shulchan Aruch, yourself, you give water to drink before you give a drink before your animals. Because when it says ve'achalta v'savata, that nesateitz v'sadchalavantavachalta v'savata, that's food. Water, we find v'ishkisa se'edaves be'iram. Hashem tells Moshe, you make water come from the rock and give water to the people and to their animals. But yeah, okay. Continues the Braisa, v'im hoyu rechavin. If the well was wide, so it's too wide to be able to climb up and down, you're gonna end up falling in. Then even a person is allowed to go and draw a bucket of water to drink, because then there's no choice. You can't climb down into it because it's too wide. If it's narrow, you can hold on to the walls on both sides. The continues the braisa. You're not allowed to fill up water and put the bucket down in front of your animal. So this part of the braisa we analyzed in the Gemara yesterday. You can fill up the bucket, pour it out in front of the animal, and then the animal can drink on its own. So, Maski, Rav Onan. So Rav Onan asks on that last part of the braisa, if you're telling me that you're not allowed to keep the, you're not allowed to keep the water in the bucket, you just have to pour it out, then in that case, what good are the pasibirois doing? So then when I asked back, what do you mean, what do you mean, ma'ilu? The ma'alos mehen. The point is, without the possibilities, you wouldn't even be able to fill up a bucket of water because you're carrying from one rishus to another. Now at least you're able to fill up the bucket. Who cares whether you can have the animal drink directly from the bucket or not? What's Rav Onan's problem? Well, the problem is that, in other words, that, well, that's what we have to figure out, what the problem is. Ela mahoyo roshe v'ruba shapara. So why in that case, Rav Onan says, if anyway you can't allow the animal to drink from the bucket, and the assumption is, as we said in the Gemara yesterday, that we're talking about where you're holding the bucket, where the problem is you may end up carrying the bucket out to Rosh Hashanah. If anyway, so if we're saying you can't hold the bucket, then why do you need roshe v'ruba of the cow inside the pasabiros, as we learned yesterday? You shouldn't need that, because in any case, if it's poured out on the ground or into a trough or whatever, then the animal will just drink it from there. Now Tosfos points out the Gemara could have answered that what it is the pasibirois help that if you're holding the bucket and you're holding the animal's reins so it can't turn its head, then you'd be allowed to. And the Braisa would be talking about where you're not holding on to the reins. But Tosfos says Rav Onan didn't like that, didn't want to accept that explanation, because when it says lo yamali, it means generically you're not allowed to fill up at all. It sounds like whether you're holding the reins or not. Another possibility, he says, is that maybe, as we brought in the Gemara yesterday, a possibility, if you're holding the bucket and you're holding the reins, so the animal can't move its head, maybe taka, you don't need Rosh HaVerubah inside. So the question is, why are we saying you need Rosh HaVerubah in all cases? So the answer is, Omar Abaya, so Abaya says, the answer that we had in the Gemara yesterday, Hocha Maya Skinon, the Evo Sa'omid B'Shos Rabim Gavoya Asara V'Rosh HaVerubah, V'Rosh HaVerubah, V'Rosh HaNichnas V'Rosh HaPas and Chula. We had the whole case yesterday where you have this trough that's in front of Rosh HaYachid. Rashi had explained over there that the animal is actually inside the house. Tosfos said it doesn't necessarily have to be that way, but in any case, the trough itself stands in Rosh HaRabim. One end of it is at the Rosh HaYachid by the house. The other end goes into the area of Ben HaPasim, so you do have a continuous Rosh HaYachid. On the face of it, you should be able to fill up a bucket of water from the well and put it on the end of the Avos, and the animal can drink from there. The problem is we make a gzera because you might find that the end of the avos of the trough where you want to put the water is damaged, and you're going to try to fix it, and you're going to put the bucket down in Rosh HaRabim and then pick it up again and put it on there, and then you're taking it from one rishus to another. So to avoid that, we make a gzera that you just have to pour the so we said you can't put the bucket down over there, or just mamalehu v'shoifach lifnei behema, you pour it into the trough. In other words, what are you doing? The one end of the trough is within the pasim, so you pour it into that end. The fact that it flows out from there into the other end is not your concern. Well, it's all in Rosh HaYachid, so you're still fine. So you're pouring from into one end of Rosh HaYachid, it's going to the other end of Rosh HaYachid, and the animal is drinking from there, so therefore you're good. No. The original plan was you were going to just put the bucket on the edge of the avos, so inside the avos, and the animal was going to drink from that. Right, but the problem is, again, that you might find a kilkel. You might find that there's... So now what you're doing is you're pouring in the water into the avos. You're pouring it in, but you're pouring it in. We're not worried that you're going to notice a kilkel. So, okay, if some of the water leaks out, some of it leaks out. You don't care about that. You're pouring it into the avos, and now the animal can just drink it from there. So that way, it's still all in Rosh HaYachid. The problem we had before, what we discussed yesterday was, the intention was you were not going to pour anything. You were going to take the bucket still full of water and put it on or in the Avos, and the animal was going to drink from it. There you have a problem. The place you need to put it on has to be flat. So it might be cracked or damaged or whatever, and then you're going to put the bucket down in order to fix it, and then you're going to pick up the bucket from Rosh HaSadam and put it in Rosh HaYachid. Whereas if you're pouring the water into the Avos, and it's staying inside the Avos, then you're fine. So the point is, in other words, Abaya is saying that the Braisa has nothing to do with the regular case of giving the animal to drink inside the Pasim, because it's talking about a special case where the animal is outside the Pasim, in the house according to Rashi, in the street according to Tosfos, whatever. Okay. Amar Rabbi Yirmiya ba'Abba Amar Rav. So now we're going to talk about, so we mentioned before that pasim berois only work for oile regel. So now we're going to have a further restriction on them, about them and about another din. Ein burgonin babavo, v'loi pasim berois b'chutz la'aretz. The concept of burgonin does not, which I'll explain in a second what that is, does not apply in Bavel, and the concept, the heter of pasim berois does not apply in any other countries outside Eretz Yisrael. Now, Chutzal Eretz usually means any country outside Eretz Yisrael and the whole rest of the world. Sometimes you have where Chutzal Eretz means outside of Eretz Yisrael and Bavel. Because Bavel had a lot of yeshivas in it, a lot of Bnei Torah, a lot of people who are traveling from one yeshiva to another. So in that sense, they were sort of like Oile Regel. Oile Regel doesn't only mean the ones who are going up for Aliyah LeRegel, Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkot to the Beis Mikdash. It means more generally people who are going for a Dvar Mitzvah. So in a place where you have many people are commonly traveling for a Dvar Mitzvah, then you have the Heter of Pasa Berois. So that would apply. You know, it's Yisrael because of Aliyah LeRegel, in Bavel because of the yeshivas, but not in other countries where they don't have as many yeshivas, as the Gemara is going to explain. What is Burgenin are huts that are set up, for example, by people who are watching the cities or watching the fields. Now, usually you have the rule like this. We're going to learn later on in the Masechta, in the fifth perek, that when you're measuring the tchum of the city, what you do is any house that is within about 70 and two-thirds amas from the last house in the city is considered an extension of the city. And then you don't measure the tchum. From the main part, you measure from, you draw a line past that house, and you start measuring from there. And if you have another house within 70 amas of that one, then it also counts, and so forth. And so you can extend the city. You can extend the city quite far that way. So you're right. So you have over here, for example, you have here is the main part of the city, and then you have here is a house, here is a house, here is a house. So okay, you have the 4,001 amma over there that it mentions over there. Ignore that for the moment. We'll deal with that detail later on. But the point is that the city limits gets extended all the way to there. And the din is, it doesn't even have to be full-fledged houses. It's enough if that we're going to learn later on. It's enough if they're burgonin, these kind of temporary huts that are set up by watchmen. So the point is that you can hold one person at least, right? So Rabbi Yirmiyahu bar Abba wants us to know that that concept does not apply in Bavel. So why not? Burgonin b'Bavel loy. The reason why Burgonin does not apply in Bavel, yishchihi bidki, because floods are common, and the floods are going to wash away the Burgonin. So they're not considered permanent enough, at least in Eretz Yisrael, which is a fairly dry country. Then the Burgonin have a certain permanence to them, and therefore they can count. But in Bavel, they're just going to get washed away. Pasibirois b'chutz la'aretz loy, and pasibirois cannot be used in chutz la'aretz outside Eretz Yisrael and Bavel, d'lo shchichi misivasa, because you don't have a lot of yeshivas in chutz la'aretz. In those days, all the big yeshivas, or almost all the big yeshivas, were in Eretz Yisrael and in Bavel. So, no, but the point is, the area between Bavel and Eretz Yisrael is neither Bavel nor Eretz Yisrael, maybe. I don't know. I mean, it depends what you look at the borders of Eretz Yisrael. I mean, you have, there's a city that's mentioned in a couple of places in the Gemara called Biram, which was on the border of Bavel. So if you consider Biram to be part of Eretz Yisrael, and the Gemara in Kedushin does, for example, then yeah, you have a continuous path over there, the desert over there that you have to cross through to get from Eretz Yisrael, from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael would be considered part of Eretz Yisrael for that. If not, then not. I'm not sure about that point. Right, so I don't know. People were not Oile Regel from Chutz La'aretz all that commonly. It could happen. People might, but they weren't actually required to. There's actually, you know the story in Pesachim over there about the goy.
Alexander.
One second, Avraham Moshe.
We have to stop interrupting the shear. It's just delays.
These are points that are worth mentioning. So, but anyway, I was gonna fine. Then we'll continue. Yeah. Okay, no. The point is, you have the story in Pesachim with the goy who pretended to be a yid, and Rabbi Huda ben Bava, not Rabbi Huda ben Beseira, rather, told him you should ask for the tail, and that exposed him, etc., etc. So Tosfos asked the question over there: why isn't Rabbi Huda ben Beseira himself being Oile LeRegel? And then and one answer is because he was in Chutz La'aretz, and in Chutz La'aretz you're not required to. Right? Okay, onward. So you can't have Burgen in Bubble because they get washed away, and you can't have Pasi Berois in Chutz La'aretz because you don't have enough people who are going for Dvar Mitzvah, such as to learn in the yeshivas. Abel Ipcha Avdinan, but vice versa you could do. You could have Burgonin in other places in Chutz La'aretz because floods are not as common, and you could have Pasi Berois in Bubble because you have the Bnei HaYeshiva go from one city to another to learn Torah. Ikadamri, another version is Amr Abiyemi Ba'aba Amarab, Ein Burgonin, U Pase Berois, Loi Babavel, Loi Bechutz La'aretz. No, neither of these things applies in Bavel or in Chutz La'aretz. Burgonin Babavel, Loi De Shchichi Bidki, because in each place, in Bavel and in the rest of Chutz La'aretz, you have problems. In Bavel, you have floods. Bechutz La'aretz, Namidloy in Chutzlaretz Burgonin wouldn't work the Shechichi Ganvi because Ganovim are much more common over there. And they steal, either they steal the things in the Burgonin so people don't stay in them, they might even steal the actual Burgon itself and carry it off. So therefore they can't be considered a place where people will actually live. So therefore nothing doing. Now, unlike in the first version where we said you can have Pasa Berois in Bavel because people go from one place to another to learn Torah, the second version we're saying no, because on the other hand, in Bavel, you have a lot of water. The whole point of Pasa Berois is you may have a hard time finding water for your animals, and therefore we give you this heter. In Bavel, they have a lot of rivers, they have canals and whatever. It's very easy to get water. You don't need to have a well in Rosh Hashanah, which you're going to surround to make the area of Rosh Hashanah in order to be able to just go to the nearby river or something. And b'chutzlar it's namilo d'lo shchichim misivasa. And in chutzlar you have less misivtis and less yeshivas, so therefore you don't have either of the heterim. So l'maisa, in Shulchan Aruch, it doesn't bring the whole concept of pasa b'rois, because what we're saying over here is it only applies in Eretz Yisrael and in Bavel, where there's people going a lot from one yeshiva to another. The concept of Burgonin, on the other hand, the Alter Rebbe mentions in Shulchan Aruch that if you have a place where there's not floods, where floods are not common, and where Ganovim are not common, then yes, you can use Burgonin as an extension of the city. Otherwise, not. Okay. Fine. We're saying in Bavel, even we'd say, no, it's not necessarily only in the time of the Bessamantha. We're saying in Bavel, they were, according to the first version, they were allowed to because you had people who are traveling between one yeshiva and the next. Okay, so now we're going to have a piece of Agadta. It's a little hard to see what the connection of this next piece is. Actually, before we get to the Agadta, actually, we have something else first. Amalei Rav Chista l'mori breder of Huna breder of Yirmi ba'aba. Amri, they say, Asisu mi Baunash lebe Knishta de Daniel. You guys walk on Shabbos from Baunash to the Shul of Daniel. The Shul of Daniel, we know the famous story in Sefer Daniel, that at one point the ministers of Daryavesh got him to pass a law that for the next 30 days nobody can daven to anybody except to you. Because we want to establish your kingship very firmly. Daniel continues to daven three times a day like he did before. They mastered on him and he ended up getting thrown into the lion's den. And Hashem saved him in Derech Nes. The place where Daniel davened, where he had his house and where he davened, they made afterwards into a shul. And now, hundreds of years later, in the time of the Amoraim, people are still davening in that shul. So Rav Chista is saying to Mori, the son of Rav Huna, the son of Rabbi Yirmi Ba'aba, they say that you are walking from Baunash, which is the city where you live, to this Shul of Daniel, to have a Tlosi Parsi, which is three Parsis, which is much more than a Tchum Shabbos, Bishabbos, and you're doing this on Shabbos. The question is, how are you doing that? That's much more than a Tchum Shabbos. Amai Samchitu. So what are you relying on? On the fact that there are a Burgenin? You're relying on the fact that there are Burgenin between Baunash and there? Your own grandfather, Rabbi Yirmi Ba'aba, said in the name of Rav, as we just said, in Burgonin B'Bavel, that the concept of Burgonin does not apply in Bavel because of the floods. Nafak va'achvilei, so Mori answered Rav Chista by going out and showing him Hanu Masvasa, there were these old ruined cities, the Mivlon, B'Shivim Am V'Shirayim, where each one was within 70 and two-thirds Amos of the next one. In other words, it's not Burgonin. What there were is, there used to be cities over there, there used to be buildings. The buildings over time collapsed, but you still had the walls of them left. That's enough to be considered. We're going to learn when we learn these details in the fifth paragraph. We're going to learn that that's enough to make it it's considered an extension of the city. Tosfos discusses over here: does Masvasa mean little villages? Does it maybe mean larger cities? Anyway, the point is that you had within 70 amos of the edge of Baunish, you had one of these. Within 70 amos of that, you had another one. All the way for the whole three parasa, or almost all of it, until the Shul of Daniel, and therefore they were actually allowed to walk there on Shabbos. Okay, so now we're going to have a piece of. I guess we're okay. So now we're going to have a piece of Agadta, which is a little bit difficult to see what the connection of this piece of Agadta is to the Gemara we were just learning. It starts out Omer of Chista Dorash Mori Barmar. It's possible. The only possibility that I've seen, I saw them quoting from Reb Chaim Kanievsky that maybe Mori Barmar over here is the same Mori Breded of Huna Breded of Yirmi Ba'aba that we just quoted. So we quoted him in something in Halacha, and now we're quoting him in something like Agadta. Could be. Rav Chista, we said Rav Chista had asked Mori Bar Mara this question. Now also Rav Chista is saying, now also he's saying it. Okay. So Omer Rav Chista, Dorash Mori Bar Mara, my dichtiv l'chol tichlo ra'isi keitz rechava mitzvahs chama'oid. The Pasuk says in Tehillim, we say it every day now in the Rebbe's Kapitel, to all desires, I found an end, but your mitzvah is very wide. So in other words, the mitzvahs, the details of the mitzvahs, meaning Torah Shabbat Peh, is very, very wide. There's very wide, meaning there's no end to it. So how big is the Torah? Dovah ze omo David v'lo pirshoi. So David said this, but he didn't explain how big is the Torah. Omer Eiv v'lo pirshoi. Omer Yechezkel v'lo pirshoi. Later people, Eiv and Yechezkel also refer to it, as we're going to quote Psukim, and none of them explain the actual size of the Torah. Ad Shabbat Zechariah ben Ido, until the Novi Zechariah at the beginning of the second Bais HaMikdash comes, or pirshoi, and he explains it. Meaning, Omra David v'lo pirshoi. So David says it, but he doesn't fully explain it. So he says the mitzvah, I mean the detail, the mitzvahs of the Torah are very wide, but how wide we don't know from that passage. Omre Eiv v'lo pirshoi. Dichtiv arucha me'eretz midor rechava miniyam. Eiv says, I mean, it's actually part of the speech of Tzofar, one of Eiv's friends in there, but whatever. The Gemara is calling it Eiv because the whole sefer is named after Eiv. So the pasuk says, he says over there, arucha me'eretz midor. It's longer than the earth, or rechava miniyam, and wider than the sea, but also doesn't explain how big it is. Omri Yechezkel v'lo pirshoi. Yechezkel also talks about the Torah, but he doesn't explain the size of it. Dichtiv, the pasuk says, Vayifreis oisa lefana. Yechezkel describes how Hashem showed him a Megillah, and that Megillah, the pasuk says, he spread it out in front of me. Vehik suv upon him v'acher. It was written on the front and on the back. V'kosav elea kinim v'hege v'hi. There was written in it kinim, hege, and hi. And what do those three words mean? Kinim zoponanusen shal tzaddikim ba'olam hazeh. Kinim refers to the troubles and the punishments and suffering that tzaddikim suffer in this world. Dichtiv, and we know that the word kinim means something sad. V'cheinu omer kino hi v'koinenua. As we find in the pasuk, the word kina means a sad thing that you sing about people. The context of the word kino hi v'koinenua, as Yechezkel is talking about the various goyish nations that are going to wind up in Gehenem, like moon for them, that they're being destroyed. We see that the word kina means something to mourn about. We say kina santan teshabab, sure. Vahege zumatan schorim shal tzadikim la'asid lavoi. The word hege is the contrast, means the reward of the tzadikim la'asid lavoi. We use the word, a similar word to Hege. We say in Mizmor Shel Yom HaShabbos, Alehi Goyen Bechiner, that you sing with Higoyen on a harp. So we see that Hege, Higoyen, represents something happy. The word he, the third thing, refers to the punishment of the Roshayim in the future. Another pasuk in Yechezkel says that event or destruction will come upon event. In other words, that there's going to be many events that are happening, many, many, many aspects of the Churban and whatever. So you see the word hoiva and the word he, which is related to it, refers to destruction and then punishment. So in other words, the point is, so Yechezkel is seeing Torah Shabbat Peh, which explains these points very clearly. In Torah Shabbat Sav, we don't really have very much about the reward La'asid Lavoi. It's barely mentioned in Torah Shabbat Sav. The fact that tzaddikim have it bad in this world is also, I mean, you have places in Torah Shabbat Sav where the question is discussed, but there's not really an explanation given. And then there's the fact, that, again, that the Rishoyim are going to get their punishment La'asid Lavoi is not really mentioned much in Torah Shabbat Sav. All these things are explained more in Torah Shabbat Peh. So in other words, Yechezkel saw a Megillah that the Gemara is saying that had Torah Shabbat Peh written in it. But still, we don't know from Yechezkel's description the size of it. Ad Shabbat, Zechariah ben Idoy, Pirshay, until Zechariah ben Idoy came and explained it. Dichtiv, you have a pasuk, Vayomer Eli, the Malach says to Zechariah, Ma Ataroya, what do you see in your Nevoah? Va'omer, and I, Zechariah, said, Ani Roya Megillah Offer, I am seeing an offer scroll. Now, some of the Mephoshim on the pasuk explain that offer means flying, but some of them explain, and the Gemara is also taking it in this way over here, that the word offer comes from an Aramaic shurdash that means folded. The word in Aramaic for folded is if. We had it in Shabbos, for example. So it means I see a folded Megillah. Orka Esrim Ba'ama V'Roch Ba'Esa Ba'ama. It's 20 Amos by 10 Amos. Now, let's analyze what he means by that. Now, the Gemara is assuming, first of all, if it's folded, that means it's really double the size. But also, the Gemara is assuming that this is the same Megillah that Yechezkel saw. Yechezkel, we said, saw it written on the front and on the back. So you have to count that also. So therefore, so if you unfold that Megillah that Zechariah saw, havala esrin be'esrin, then it comes out 20 by 20. And 20 amas by 20 amas. Yechezkel saw it written on the front and on the back. So therefore, v'chikalfasla. So if you peel the front and the back apart, in other words, put them side by side, how much do you get? Aboin v'estrin, 40 by 20 amas. Now, we don't mean human amas. We mean, so to speak, Hashem's amas. So what is, how do we figure the scale of Hashem's amas? You have a pasuk in Yeshaya, Naftarah of Shabbos Nachmu. Mi modad b'shalei mayim. The pasuk says, "Who measured out the water with his handfuls?" B'shamayim bazeres tikin, and he set up the shamayim with his zeres. A zeres we've learned before is a half an amma, three tefachim. So therefore, it means, in other words, that the whole heavens and the earth that's underneath them are all equal, so to speak, to half an amma in Hashem's measurements. So it means, therefore, so in other words, the whole Shemayim and Aretz is one quarter of a square amma, because a half by a half makes a quarter of a square, a half an amma by a half an amma makes a square of an area of a quarter of an amma. We just said that the Megillah is 20 by 40, which equals 800 square amas. So it means, so 800 versus a quarter, nimtza kol ha'olam kulo echad m'shloishas alafim ma'asayim b'tarda. So it comes out that the entire world is 1/3200th of the size of the Torah. Torah Shebaal Peh, we're talking primarily. So the whole world is one, meaning, you know, Shemayim and Aretz, the whole Gashmiyistika world that we see is as vast as it is, as many billions of light years that it is in across, is 1/3200th of Torah Shebaal Peh. The Alter Rebbe actually mentions in Hilchos Talmud Torah a practical thing that comes out from it. On the one hand, a person should never say, "Well, Torah Shebaal Peh is so vast, I can never learn the whole thing." When we talk about it, the size of Torah Shebaal Peh, we mean when we're talking about, you have not just the actual halachas. There's a certain number of them you have in Shulchan Aruch, you have in the Rambam, you have whatever. You have a finite number of halachas that we actually have. The pupil of the Torah, this that you're able to deduce halachas from other halachas and things like that, that's, as we're saying over here, is a huge number of times the size of the world. But, so you're saying that Yechezkel saw it and Zechariah saw it. We doesn't say whether they, I mean, the pastor Yechezkel did, because he describes the contents of it. So that's the point. In other words, there's more and more Sfarim, because, in other words, so it's all implicit in Torah Shebaal Peh. The point is, in other words, that Torah, in other words, no end. There's an end. So that's the Alter Rebbe stresses. There is an end to the actual halachas that we need to know. So a person has to make it his responsibility to learn all of the halachas of Torah. But then, when you go beyond that, when you're going beyond just learning the halachas, to actually delving into them and explaining the deeper ideas behind them, and to compare one halacha with the other and derive new ones, that kind of thing that we're saying is much larger than the world. So Marsha explains that we have the four different ones. We're saying David, Eov, Yechezkel, and Zechariah. Each of them is describing a different dimension of Torah. You have like this. You have the actual halachas. You have the actual halachas and details of the mitzvahs. You have the reasons behind them. You have the Maisa Bereshis, and you have Maisa Merkava. So David is only describing one dimension. The Torah is very wide. Eov is adding another dimension. The Torah is also very long, Aruka and Rechava. Yechezkel is adding the third thing that you also have. You should know there's also Maisa Bereshis to consider. It's on the back. It's like hidden from your eyes, but it's there. And then Zechariah is explaining the whole thing, all four dimensions of it, and therefore that's why we're saying, like, you combine it together and you unfold it and you take the back and put it together with the front, so that way you have all four dimensions. So that's what we're saying, 3200. As far 3200, I don't know. Right, come on. Okay, there's a mimer of the Rebbe Maharash where he explains what's the significance of the number 3200. We know there's Lamed Beis Nesivos Chochma, the 32 paths of Chochma with which Hashem created the world, the 22 letters of the Aleph Beis and the Asara Ma'amores. each of them multiplied by 100, because each one is kovel miyud, viyud miyud. Each one contains the 10 spheres, and the 10 spheres themselves contain the 10, each one contains the 10 spheres with it. So therefore, you wind up with 3,200. That's he explains. You have chachma law of the Torah versus chachma tata with which Hashem created the world. We say that Hashem b'chachma yosad oretz. We also say Torah is chachmasi ratzon inshallah kadosh baruch hu. So that chachma law is 3,200 times greater, metaphorically, than the chachma with which Hashem created the world. V'amar of Chista, Dorosh Mori Bar Mar. Also of Chista says, Mori Bar Mar gave another Jerusha, about another Jerusha. My Dichtiv, a Pasuk in Yirmiyah says like this. Yirmiyah saw a Nevuah, V'hine Shnei Dudoi Te'enim Mu'odim Lifnei Heichal Hashem. There were two pots full of figs placed in front of the Heichal, in front of the Bismithash. Hadud Ha'echad Te'enim Tovis Ma'od Kise'enei Habakurois. One pot was full of very, very good quality figs, like the early ripening figs, the kind that everybody would want to eat. The other one is full of very bad figs, which they're so bad they can't be eaten. So in context, in the psukim over there, it's talking about that Hashem tells him the first one represents the people who went into Golos with Yechonia, where we 11 years before the Churban Bayis Rishon, where we know that they included many tzaddikim and Talmid Chachamim. You have the famous Chorash v'Hamasker, the carpenters and the locksmiths, which the Gemara explains in a number of places, means the great Talmid Chachamim. So they included them and included various Nevi'im, for example, Yechezkel, and included Daniel, and so forth. So they were the very high quality Jews. And the pasuk goes on to say that Hashem says in Nevuah that they're going to, and eventually they and their children are going to be restored to Eretz Yisrael, and they're going to have a geula from Golus Babel. Then the one full of very bad figs represents the Jews who were left in Yerushalayim, who Tzidkiyahu was ruling over them. Most of them are Ami Aretz and Rishayim. So the pasuk goes on. So they're worshiping Avodah Zarah, they're doing other Avedas. So the Pasuk goes on to describe that they're going to suffer terribly in the Churban. They're going to die of hunger or the sword or this or that or whatever. So the Gemara explains over here in a similar vein, Te'enim atovis elot tzaddikim gemurim, the good figs represents the tzaddikim gemurim, including the ones who went into Golos with Yechaniah. Te'enim arois elu reshoyim gemurim, the bad figs represents the reshoyim gemurim, who are left in Yerushalayim being ruled over by Tzidkiyahu. V'shem atoima ovad sivrim avotel sekuyam. Now you're going to think the pasuk just goes on to say that the te'enim arois are going to end up suffering from all the tragedies of the Churban and whatever. So you would think that's it, they're goners, Hashem wants nothing more to do with them. No, Talmud Lomar, therefore you have a different pasuk in Shir Hashirim that tells us that after all, even those people have a future. You might think ovad sivrim, their ideas are gone, or batal sikuyam, their hope for the future is gone. In other words, they're goners, they lose, they're going to end up losing Olam Hazeh and maybe Olam Haba as well. No, Talmud Lomar had dudoim nosnu reyach. You have a pasuk in Shir Hashirim, and it says the dudoim give a fragrance. Now, dudoim, the simple meaning of it is it's a kind of herb. It's the famous one that Reuven brought to Leah, and then Rachel asked for them, etc. The Gemara is darshining over here the word dudoim as related to the word dud. We just had before adud ha'echad, adud ha'sheni, so adud ha'adud ha'echad. So therefore, the Gemara is explaining dudoim is the plural of dud. So it means both dudim, both pots full of figs, nostu reyach, they give a fragrance. Elu ve'elu asidim sheitnu reyach. Both the tzaddik and even the Rishoyim Gemurim in the future are going to give a fragrance. Because as we learned the other day in the Gemara, they get cleaned up in the washing machine in Gehenna. They cry bitter tears over there, realizing that Hashem judged them truthfully. And eventually they come to Gan Eden and they also, Lasid Lava, give a fragrance just like the Tzaddikim. We're talking about even the Rishoyim. So again, the two pots of full of figs that Yirmiyah saw, one of them represents the Tzaddikim, the other one represents the Rishoyim. In context, in the Pasuk over there, he's saying they're going to be destroyed and killed and whatever in the siege and the Churban. But nevertheless, the Pasuk is telling, by the other Pasuk, HaDudoyim Nosnu Reyach, the fact that the Pasuk chooses, the fact that Hashem chose, why do you have to show him the figs in pots, Dapka? You could have just showed him two piles of figs or something. The fact that it's in pots, where pot is called a dud, goes together with the pasuk hadudoyim nosnu reyach, that both pots full of figs eventually give a good fragrance, and Hashem has pleasure from both of them. Yeah. Okay. Dorash Rava, so now Rava also darshins that pasuk hadudoyim nosnu reyach, but in a different way. My dichtiv hadudoyim nosnu reyach elu b'chure Yisrael shle tamu tam chet. This refers to the young Jewish men who have not tasted the taste of averus, because they haven't chet or avera in the Gemara a lot of times means specifically znus. So the Jewish men The Jewish young men, unlike their Goyish counterparts, are careful and they're not involved in znus before they get married. So that they're represented in the pasuk by the dudoyim, which are a fragrant flower. They increase the taiva of a husband and wife for each other, which is why Rachel wanted them in the first place. So that represents these bachuri Yisrael. And the pasuk continues. So the whole pasuk in Shir Hashirim goes like this: Hadudoyim nosnu reyach. The dudoyim have given their fragrance. Va'al pesachenu kol megodim. By our doors are all kinds of delicacies. Chadoshim gam yishanim. New ones and old ones. Doidi tzafanti loch. My beloved one, which is Hashem, I have hidden them all away for you. So the Gemara is dashing in the pasuk phrase by phrase. Hadudoyim nosnu reyach is the bachuri Yisrael. When it continues, by our doors are all kinds of delicacies. That means, and that refers to the Jewish women who tell Megodim, Meloshin Magidos, Pischehen, their openings to their husbands. In other words, they tell their husbands when they became Nida so that their husbands know to stop having relations with them. And another explanation is Megodim is related to the word Oigdos. They tie up their entrances and reserve them only for their husbands. Again, in other words, unlike the Goyish women who are promiscuous and are mezana with anybody, the Jewish women are careful and they only have and they're tzniastic and they only have relations with their husbands. The pasuk continues, Chadoshim gam yeshanim doidi tzafantilach, the new as well as the old. My beloved one, I've hidden away for you. What is the new and the old? Omra Knesset Yisrael lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu means that the Jewish people say to Hashem, Ribono Shel Olam, Harbe Gzeiros Gazarti Al Atzmi Yosim Mamasha Gazarti Alai. I made on myself, we Jewish people made on ourselves, many more Gzeiros than you put on us, V'kiyamtim, and we fulfilled them. In particular, Marsha says this refers particularly when it comes to Nida. Minatora, after all, you only have a woman is Nida for a maximum of 7 days, right? Midrabanan, you have the Chumra Dirabzera, that any tipas dam, she sits for it Shiva Nakim as if she was a Zava, and then nowadays we even have the 5 days before it. So we have many Xeris and Takanas that we voluntarily accepted on ourselves in this and in many other areas, and we've kept them. So that's the Chadoshim Gam Yeshanim. Not only we have the new mitzvahs and Xeris and Takonis that we've accepted on ourselves, as well as the old ones that were originally given, and how Sinai. So in this connection, Rav Chista says to one of the Rabbanon who used to arrange Agadtas in front of him. So this Rabbanon, this person, he was an expert in Agadta, and he would prepare statements of Agadta and then say them over in the Mismedrash in front of Rav Chista, and Rav Chista and his Talmidim would be able to learn them and analyze them. So he asks him, Mishmialach Chadoshim Gam Yeshanim Mahu, have you heard any explanation what the words Chadoshim Gam Yeshanim mean in this pasuk? Amalei, so he says to him, Eilu Mitzvahs Kalus Ve'Eilu Mitzvahs Chamuras. It refers to the easier mitzvahs and the hard mitzvahs. Now, in what sense is that new and old? Marsha explains, when we say kalos and chamuris, kalos means like the basic mitzvah itself, and chamuris means all the details in the mitzvah. Let's say, for example, with Shabbos. Kalos is the basic thing that you should rest on Shabbos. Chamuris would be all the details of the malachas. Now, obviously, you can't learn about the details of the malachas before you've learned that there's a concept of Shabbos at all. So therefore, the kalos can be called the old ones because they came first, and then afterwards come the chamuris, the details. Rabbi Yaakov Emden puts it a different way. He says the vort is something that's easy to do, something that's new feels easy to do, even if objectively it's much harder. Something that's hard to do, something that's the other way around, something that's old, something that you already know from a while ago, even if it's easy, yeah, it's boring, I don't want to do it again. So therefore, there is a certain direct connection between new and easy versus old and hard. Anyway. So the new and the old represent the easy and the hard mitzvahs. Amalei, Rav Chista says that doesn't work. V'chitorah pa'amim nitna. What do you think? The Torah was given piecemeal. The Torah was given all at once on Har Sinai. So what do you mean chadoshim and yeshanim? The concept of Shabbos and the malachas of Shabbos were all given at the same time. Rather, it means the Chadoshim, as we said before, the Divrei Sofrim, which they're new because they come in later generations. And then the Yeshanim are the original mitzvahs of the Torah. Okay. Dorash Rava, so now further in this connection about the Takanos and Gzeiros of the Chachamim, Rava Darshin, my dichtiv v'yosim ehem abni hizar, the last one of the last psukim of Kehelas says, More than these, my son, be careful. This is Shlomo HaMelech talking to his son specifically, or to the Jewish people generically. More than these, be care, my son, be careful. Asois Sfarim Harbe, v'gomer, making books, there's going to be no end. Asois Sfarim Harbe Ein Kets is the way that is the Lashon HaPasuk. So what does that mean? Bni saying my son, which means also my Talmud, he's Zohar b'divrei Sofrim Yosim b'divrei Torah. Be more careful with divrei Sofrim, even more than divrei Torah. That's what it means. Yosim Ehema, even more than these, all the divrei Torah that already exist. Be even more careful with the dvarim of the Chachamim. Because when it comes to the Torah, you have some things the Torah tells you to do, some things the Torah tells you not to do. Not all of them involve punishments. A mitzvah sase doesn't involve punishments. Not even loisa says involve, not even all loisa says involve punishments necessarily. The divrei sofrim, whereas when it comes to divrei sofrim, kol ha over al divrei sofrim chayav misa. A person is over on divrei sofrim, any of them, he's chayav misa. Now, why should a person be more chayav for divrei sofrim than for divrei Torah? Rabbeinu Yonah gives a reason. A person is over on divrei Torah, okay, it can mean, you know, he's lazy, he's not feeling, you know, he's not feeling up to it or whatever. So, okay. On the other hand, a person goes against divrei sofrim, it means he's deliberately rejecting, saying that the sofrim have no right to make these rules. Well, that's a pretty serious thing. That's kfira. So, therefore, he gets a much more severe punishment of misa. Al-Pichsidus, there's the idea, it talks about that the Divrei Chachamim, the Gzeres and the Tarkonis of the Chachamim, are like a person's house. It's Makif HaRochak. You have in Chsidus, there's Makif HaKorev, the closer Makif to a person, like his clothing, and Makif HaRochak, the further out one, like the house. And a little quack in the house is a pretty serious thing. The whole thing can come down on your head. So therefore, the same thing, a little tiny quack in not keeping Divrei Sofrim can have very serious consequences. Then continues Rava with his drasha. Shema toimerim yesh ben mamash mepnei ma'aloi nichtavu. So you might ask, so if the Divrei Chachamim are so important, then why weren't they written down? Omar Kras, so Svarim habe in kates. That's why the pasuk continues, making Svarim there would be no end. Because like we said before, the Torah Shabbat Peh is 3,200 times the size of the entire world or the entire universe, whatever. So there'd be no, it would be impossible to write down the whole thing. So therefore, instead it was kept as Torah Shabbat Peh. Until it had to be written down because the people were starting to forget it. The Chidah, by the way, has an interesting point in it on this Gemara. He says, you find after the time of the Gemara, there was a tremendous Yuridus Adurus. You have, for example, that after that, you have there's no Chacham ever again who what he says, his Pesachim and Halacha or anything are accepted by the entire world. Each place has its own minhagim. People are, you don't have yeshivas. You don't have, in the old days, you had yeshivas where tens of thousands of people would come. Nowadays, you have kam a few hundred people in most yeshivas, etc. What changed, he says, is this fact that Torah Baal Peh was written down. Up until that point, when they were learning at Baal Peh, they had to put in this tremendous effort, as the Gemara is going to say now, into learning Torah Baal Peh. That itself made them on a much higher level. After it had to be written down. Okay, it had to be written down. There was no choice. It was going to be forgotten. Eis lasis lashem and all that. But still, it caused a tremendous yuridus adurus. The fact that a person doesn't have to put their mind to memorizing Torah Shabbat Peh anymore. Yeah. Okay. That same pasuk in Kehelas continues. The lahag harbe yigias pasuk. That same pasuk continues. With much lahag, there is the hard work of flesh. So what does that mean? Amar HaPapap. So the Gemara first darshins the word lahag as like the word la'ag, which means making fun. Amar HaPapap, breder of acha ba'adam, shmeder of acha ba'ula, melamed. This pasuk teaches us, shekol ha'mala igal, divrei chachamim, a person who makes fun. Lahag and la'ag are related because a hey and an ayin are both sounds that you make in the throat. So it means a person makes fun of divrei chachamim, nidan b'tsoya re'sachas. He gets punished in Gehenim in boiling tsoya. We have the famous Gemara in Gittin that we learn on Tisha B'Av mentions that Oysa Ish is punished like that in Gehenim because he's a perfect example of maligal divrei chachamim. So therefore, in other words, the idea is v'lahag, if there is making fun, harbe yigias baso, there'll be much wearying of flesh. In other words, that a person is punished with what makes a person weary. It wears a person out to go to the bathroom and to excrete. So therefore, that he gets punished with that. Why dafka does he deserve to get punished with soya resachas? I saw a vote from Reb Nachman Breslover, because such a person thinks that the divrei chachamim are something unnecessary. They're like a waste product. So therefore, he gets punished with the waste product. Why hot? Because Bepashtus, Bepashtus makes it a better punishment. But also, yeah, the Rambam actually has an expression about it in Pirush Mishnayos that the idea is this itself, the gnai that he made, that he dared make fun of the Divrei Chachamim, that itself, in a way, is the biggest punishment. That itself deserves to be that Tsoya Reisachas is like not even as repulsive and disgusting as the kind of attitude that he had towards the Divrei Chachamim. Maskiflo Rava, however, Rava asked on that. That may well be true. It is true, fine, that the Rishoyim do got punished like that. But is that what the Pasuk means? Miksiv la'ag, after all, the Pasuk doesn't say la'ag with an ayin. La'hag ksiv, it says la'hag with a hay. And la'hag with a hay means working hard. Ela kol ha'hoiga behen. So what it means is a person who delves into the words of Torah. La'hag, maloshen hoiga, maloshen, as we said, an omar aleph, alehi goyen b'chino, bina hagigi, many different psukim, where the word hege means, among other things, to speak. So a person speaks and thinks about words of Torah, toyim tam boser, he tastes the taste of meat. In other words, he realizes a tam, he realizes he gets a tam in his learning, and it feels like the pleasure that a person has from eating meat. There's taka a connection between learning Torah and eating meat. You have the famous expression, the Alter Rebbe brings in Tanya, for example, that where Rava said, adayin lo echilna bistur de Torah, I haven't yet eaten my daily beef, and therefore I'm not, therefore my head is not as sharp to learn Torah. Right, so we see that there's a direct connection between learning Torah and meat. Yeah. We learn in a braisa speaking about the importance of Divrei Chachamim. It happened that Rabbi Akiva was in jail, as we know, the famous thing that he was put in jail for teaching Torah. Rabbi Yeshua HaGarsi was attending to him, was bringing him food and whatever. Garsi, Rashi explains, was either he comes from a place called Geres, or it means that his job was making grisim, which is split peas. Anyway, whatever it is, he was one of Rabbi Akiva's Talmidim, so he was able to serve Rabbi Akiva in jail. Mistama, I'm sure, you know, you can imagine behind the scenes, they probably had to pay the Romans a nice big fat bribe to allow that, but whatever, anyway. So, okay. Every day he would bring him a certain amount of water, enough to be able to wash for bread and to be able to drink. And one day the guard at the prison meets up with Rabbi Yeshua HaGarsi. He says to him, what's going on? You have a lot of extra water over here today. It could have been a new guard. It could have been Stam, one of the old guards, and he decided today to take the opportunity to harass Rabbi Yeshua. Whatever it is, you have a lot of water over there. What do you need so much water for? He doesn't know him until he dies, after all. As far as I'm concerned, you're going to use it to try to dig out from the jail, because you're going to pour some of the extra water on the ground, soften the dirt, and then you're going to be able to more easily dig the dirt and get Rabbi Akiva out of jail. No, nothing doing. He poured out half the water and left Rabbi Yeshua with only half the water. When he finally came into the jail to Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Akiva didn't know why there had been the delay. Like this, Rabbi Yeshua is usually there at a certain time. Like this, he's late because of this. Rabbi Akiva didn't know what happened. He says, Yeshua, don't you realize that I'm old and my life depends on yours? In other words, if you're late, then what's going to be with me? How come you're late? So Rabbi Yeshua, he was 120, yeah. So Rabbi Yeshua told him what happened, that it wasn't my fault. The guard accosted me and then forced me in. So Rabbi Akiva says, okay, ten li maim she'eto yadai, fine, give me the water and let me wash my hands for bread. Amalai, so Rabbi Yeshua says, lishtes ein magin, there's not going to be enough to drink over there. Lito yadecha magin, what do you mean? If you use them to wash your hands, you're not going to have enough left to drink. What are you going to do then? Amalai, so Rabbi Akiva says to him, ma'esa, so what should I do? Shechayav an alei and misa. If you go against Divrei Chachamim, as we said before, you're chayav misa. Now, of course, Rabbi Akiva could have easily used in jail, but he wanted to be machmer on himself, Tosfos explains. Mutav omus misas atzmi v'loy ever al das chaver. Better that I should die on my own from not being able to drink rather than being over on the words of my colleagues, the Chachamim, who said that you have to wash before bread. And by the way, you know, it does bring in, some of the poskim say there maybe are heterim, maybe if you're eating less than a kabetza, maybe if you wrap up your hands. The Alter Rebbe at the end of Hilchos Netilas Yadayim says nothing doing. When it comes to bread, there's no heter except to wash. We see that in our Gemara over here. Rabbi Akiva can't just wrap up his hands. He can't eat less than a kazayas at a time or whatever. He has to wash. Well, Omru, so they said, Loi tam kulam adjehevele mayim benoto yodav. Rabbi Akiva would not eat any of the food until they brought him more water. They finally managed to convince the guards, I guess, that look, you know, if you don't let him, he's going to die in jail. That's going to, your whole plan is you want to keep him alive and make a public trial out of him, whatever. So they finally allowed to bring him more water. And then he washed his hands and he had what to drink also. When the Chachamim heard that story, Amru, they said, if you see that Rabbi Akiva is doing this even when he's old and it's much harder for him to last without water for that extra time, then you can be sure when he was younger, how much more so that he was careful with Netilas Yadayim. And if even he's doing it in jail, how much more so that he was always careful with it when he's not in jail. Now, you do have an interesting point over here, which is you have a famous machloikus between the Rambam and a number of other Rishonim on the question, are you allowed to be Moser Nefesh where the Torah doesn't require you to? We know you have to be Moser Nefesh for the big three, Avodah Zarah, Gilad, Ayis, and Shefach Zadamim. We know if it's Shas HaShmad. We know if it's a Befahesia, etc. But other than that, the Rambam holds if none of those things apply, you're not allowed to go on Mesiras Nefesh. And if you do, then it's considered suicide. On the other hand, many Rishonim hold you are allowed to. So what would the Rambam do with our story in the Gemara over here? So one possibility is, it may have been Shas HaShmad, but not necessarily because, eventually the Chum heard of it doesn't make it Befahesia. Befahesia is when at the time 10 people know about it. Shas HaShmad it may or may not have been. At this point, the Romans had outlawed learning Torah, which is why Rabbi Akiva was thrown in jail in the first place. Not necessarily had they outlawed all the other mitzvahs yet. So one explanation is that when you have that there is a concept that when a tzaddik in the generation sees that there's a certain mitzvah that people are being careless with, then he's allowed to go on extra mesiras nefesh for it, even when it's not required. So that might have been the case of a year. People might have been getting careless with Ntilas Yadayim in those days, and therefore Rabbi Akiva felt he has to be machmir in order to set an example. Another possibility is maybe when he's saying over here that he's going to die, it doesn't mean literally he's not necessarily going to die on the spot. It just means it's going to make him weaker than he otherwise would be. Even okay, he's old, he still could manage to last a day without drinking. Or, with only drinking less than usual. So it wouldn't necessarily kill him on the spot. It would just make him weaker. And then the Rambam would agree that he could do that. I saw a cute vote on it. That is that we know that Rabbi Akiva, we know from the Gemara in Brachas, Rabbi Akiva is saying when they killed him, then he was saying Shema and Yotzen Shmasi Be'echad. And he said to his Talmidim, all my life I've been looking forward to that I should be able to die Al Kiddush Hashem. And now I finally have the opportunity. So I'm happy for it. So he's saying over here, on the other hand, if I don't drink this water, I might die. Mutav sh'omus mises atzmi. Better that I should give up the etzim, the desire that I had all this time to die al Kiddush Hashem. If it means I'm going to die because I don't drink from this water, I'm willing to do that rather than be over on Divrei Chachamim. So even to give up his life dream of Mesiras Nefesh, he's willing to do that for this. Okay. Amar of Yehuda Amar Shmuel. When Shlomo HaMelech made the takonis of Eruvin, meaning Eruv Chatzeres, and of Netilas Yadayim, so Eruv Chatzeres, the purpose of it is, Rashi explains, it's a siyog. Like this, a person, the Rambam explains it also in Hilchos Eruvin, that if you're allowed to carry from one chotzer to another, or from houses into the chotzer or whatever, you may mistakenly think that you're allowed to carry in Rosh Hashanah. You're going to think the chotzer is like Rosh Hashanah. A lot of people walk around in it. So you're going to think you're allowed to carry in Rosh Hashanah as well, or between Rosh Hashanah and Rosh Hashanah. And that's why, to avoid that, is why Shlomo made the takana of Eruv Chatzeres. And Netilas Yadayim, the Gemara explains in Shabbos, the original takana of Netilas Yadayim was if you're going to be eating kodshim. Later Chachamim made it also if you're going to eat Truma, and later on even if you're going to eat Cholin. But the original Takana that Shlomo made was in order to be able to eat Kodshim, you have to wash your hands. So when he did that, Yotza Basko V'Omra, Basko came out and said, Bni im Chocham Libecha, my son, meaning Shlomo, if your heart is wise, Yismach Libi Gam Oni, then my heart is also happy. V'Omer, and another Pasuk also in Mishlei says a similar idea, Chacham Bni V'Samach Libi, my son is wise, my heart is happy. V'Oshiva Chofi Dover, and I will now be able to respond back to those who make fun of me with a solid statement. So Marashar explains, these two Pesukim represent these two Takanas. One represents Eruv Chatzeres, that he had the chokhba to realize that there could be that confusion between Rosh Hashanah and Rosh Hashanah Abim, and between the Chotzer and Rosh Hashanah Abim and whatever. And the other one, Varshiva Chofi Dava, refers to the concept of Netilas Yadayim, where we find in later generations there were people who were mezalzel in it, as we just said, that there were people who were careless with that din. And therefore, so Hashem is saying now in the Pasuk that no, now that you made that takana, we'll be able to answer such people and explain to them that it is an important takana's chachamim, and you have to keep it. Dorashrova, my dichtiv, Rava Darshan's a pasuk, another pasuk in Shashim. It's actually the pasuk right before. So earlier on, at the top of the Amud, we quoted the pasuk Hadudoyim Nosnu Reach, and Rava gave a drosh on it. This pasuk that we're going to quote now is the pasuk right before it. So Marashah explains they were part of the same drosha originally. The Gemara just mentioned the second one first because it was relevant over there. Now we're going back and giving the first part of Rava's drosha. My dichtiv l'cha doidi neitzei asada nalina makfarim. The psukim go like this. Come, my beloved, Netzei Hasadeh, let's go out to the fields. Nolino Bakforim, we'll stay overnight in the villages. Nashkim alakromim, we'll get up early in the morning and go to the vineyards. Nire imporcha gefen, we'll see whether the grapevines are flowering. Pitach hasmodar, whether the smodar has opened up. Smodar is a very early stage of the growth of the fruit. You can see that there are grapes there or other kinds of fruit, but they're very, very tiny. If the pomegranates have sprouted, Shom eten es doidai loch, and there I will give my love to you. So what do those psukim mean? The pasuk is saying, come my beloved Hashem, let's go out to the field. Meaning, don't judge me like the people who live in big cities. Where in big cities you have problems of stealing and arayas and people swearing falsely or for no purpose. Because in big cities you have a lot of people. So you have a lot more cases where people are going to Dine Torah and sometimes swearing falsely or just where people are doing business with each other on the street and, you know, a person will say, I swear to God, such and such, and it's not necessarily true or whatever. So don't judge me like that. Rather, let's go out to the field, meaning, come, I'll show you the Tamar Chachamim who live in the little towns and they work as farmers, because that's what everybody did and who lived in small towns in those days. They worked as farmers and they still learn Torah even though they have a very hard time of it. A farmer's life is very, very hard, very, very, you know, there's a tremendous amount of physical work you have to do on a farm, and still these people fatifzich and learning Torah. The pasuk continues, Nolino Bakforim, let's stay over in the villages. What's Bakforim? I'll take Bakforim ella Bakoifrim. Don't read Bakforim, but rather Bakoifrim among the ones who deny. Meaning, Boiva Arecha Oisam, come, let me show you those. And actually, this is something changed by the censor. At the bottom over here, it says it's supposed to be Zare Shal Esav, the descendants of Esav. She Shvata Lehen Tova, you gave them so much good, Behen Kofra Bucha, and they deny you. They're Koifrim, they deny that Hashem runs the world. So let me show you the contrast between us and them. The pasuk continues, Nashkim alakromim, let's get up and go to the vineyards. Eile bote knesiyas ubote medrashis, this is the shuls and the bote medrash, where people sit in rows like in a vineyard. We had in Brachas, for example, Kedem b'Yavne, that the yeshiva in Yavne was called the vineyard in Yavne, because the Talmidim sat in rows like vines in a vineyard. Nira in Porcha Gefen, we'll see if the grapevines have blossomed. Eilu Bale Mikra, that refers to, we'll find over there people who are learning Mikra, who are learning Tanakh. That's like a flower. You can't eat the flower, but it shows there's something better to come. You can't learn halacha from Torah Shebichsav, but it's still an important stage in learning. So it's like flowers. Pita Hasmodar, the smodar has developed, so you have these tiny little grapes. Eilu Bale Mishnah, that refers to the people who are learning Mishnah, because the Mishnah has the halachas in it, but it's like they're undeveloped grapes. You can't eat them yet. You can't paskin halacha directly from the Mishnah, but it's a further stage in learning. You have, at least now, you know the basic halachas, and now you need Gemara in order to analyze them. When it says the pomegranates have developed, that refers to the Bali Gemara, where they're now they have everything that's needed in order to be able to actually learn and paskin halacha and know what to do. Shom eten es doidai loch, and when the pasuk finishes off, there I will give my love to you, means ar echa kvodiu vegodli shvach bonei of noise. There I will show you in these places, in the shoals and the batei medrash, where you have these people who are learning mikra, mishnah, and gemara. That is where I will show you my honor and my greatness and the shvach and the praise of my sons and daughters who learn Torah and keep mitzvahs. And then he continued with the next drasha about Hadudoyim Nosnu Reach, that Hadudoyim and Val Psachenu Komagodim refer to the Jewish young men and women who hold back their Yetzirah and then do only the right thing. Okay. And we'll continue tomorrow with the rest of the Sagadta and then get back to matters of Pasibirois and other topics. Shkayach.